As regular listeners will know, RNIB Connect Radio's London studio is based in the Talking Book Studios in Camden. So I'm lucky enough to meet the authors and narrators who create our wonderful Talking Books library. And while I'm not supposed to have favourites, my next guest, for reasons that will become apparent, is always a welcome visitor. Regina Regan, welcome to Read On.
Thank you very much, Red.
So I typed your name into the RNIB Talking Books Library and it came back with 85 titles. Can you remember your first book that you recorded for RNIB?
The first book I recorded was Sabrina the Teenage Witch, back when it was reel to reel and there was one producer for two studios simultaneously. So if you made a mistake, you had to wait until they could attend to your problem. So that was terrifying. So when we moved here to Camden, it was bliss.
So you must have seen a few changes over the years.
I have. Yeah, I mean, I think the studio is just fantastic. It's the production. I mean, people who listen will know, but the production values are just incredible. And I champion the RNIB and the Talking Books. And all my friends would tell you that her favorite place to work is the RNIB. Yes, she always says that. So, yeah, I guess I have seen changes, but all for the good, I think.
Is it less nerve-wracking now that, you know, it's digital recording, so people aren't having to physically cut tapes and stick them back together?
Well, that's sort of what I was referring to. When you're sitting there, when you make a mistake, you already are thinking, oh. And when you have to wait because, you know, there's only one producer, one engineer for two studios running at the same time, you know, every time you make a mistake, you think, that's another 32 seconds, that's another 42 seconds. So yes, it does. The fact that you can just, as we say, sort of fall back and pick up again so quickly, it minimizes the humiliation quotient. Still there, but minimized.
And you've recorded some fabulous titles, some real modern classics. The ones that always stick out for me are the Tales of the City books.
Oh, yes, I loved those. I was so genuinely thrilled when, I mean, to get one, but then to be asked to do this sort of series was just wonderful. I hadn't read the books, but I'd seen there was a television sort of miniseries years before with Olympia Dukakis playing Mrs. Madrigal and Laura Linney. That was the first time I ever saw Laura Linney playing Marianne Singleton. So I have to admit, I did lift a bit from that, just from my memory, because they were so vivid and real, those creations, those characters. But no, I love doing those. Yeah.
Well, for me, it was one of those wonderful discoveries. I lost my sight as far as being able to read was concerned after Baby Cakes, which I think was the third or fourth
book. Yes, I
think
it was. That's right.
So for me, you are the voice of Tales of the City. So, which is why I was so keen
to get
you in
now. No, thank you. No, and you know, I've done a number of series. One of the ones that I love, if I could just mention it, is Janet Ivanovich's Stephanie Plum series. They're wild caper novels, and they're in the first person. So, even though I know she's written like 100 of them, I think I've done 5. But even though I know I'm not a 28-year-old bounty hunter from northern New Jersey, I feel like I'm now Stephanie. Like I have become Stephanie, and the cast of characters in that, because it is, there's a cartoony element to it. So even though I keep Stephanie's voice quite normal and sort of like my voice, but a bit younger, you know, the characters around her are insane. So it's just fun to go a bit wild creating that world. And then, because I keep rather frightening amounts of notes and things, I can go back and say, oh, we've got Mrs. Carwatch. She's her neighbor. She's a low talker. So she's a low talker. She just talks really low and not, you know. So I just write little notes to myself. And then when I revisit characters and they return, I'm so happy.
Do you make notes that the low talker is somebody who you remember meeting in 1985 on a Brooklyn sidewalk? Or do the voices just come to you?
Sometimes I'd love to say, oh, I pull them from real, you know, you hear actors say, oh, I just sit in coffee shops and let voices drift over me. No, it's probably more likely that I might remember a role I did on stage a long time ago. But really, it's just, this is the way that I discover characters, if you like, if that doesn't sound too in quotes, is obviously the author gives us great clues, but sometimes they don't go into too much description about the character, or, you know, even where they're from. So I look at the language of the character. Do they speak very rapidly? Do they give a lot away? Or perhaps they're very terse and the sentences are very short. And you can glean a lot from the attitude of the character, which is why I like to prepare so well. So I kind of know, are they being themselves? Are they afraid of revealing something? Are they trying to conceal? Or are they being quite effusive? Maybe they're nervous. Maybe they're flirting. You know, so all those kind of little subtle things, that's how I sort of find the voice. Somebody who only speaks in very short sentences, I probably would give quite a sort of hesitant, careful voice, rather than someone who just babbles on like me. When I started, I used to do things that I now just roll my eyes at myself, if that can be possible, and think, oh, I used to, I think, impose a voice on a character.
So we've mentioned the way that things have changed, and of course one of the things that has changed is that you can now carry the script of a book on an iPad. Do you still mark up paper copies, or do you mark them up electronically now?
I have to confess, I still use paper. It's not because I'm a Luddite, but I get migraines from lights, and I had sort of a couple of bad experiences with devices and using it all day long. I will have to switch, because now that's the standard format, particularly commercially. They send out PDF files, you know, and you use it on the, but so I have yet to tackle the markup on the iPad, but I completely mark up my manuscript, my A4.
And how did you come to the RNIB? What actually led you into the studios in the first place?
I wrote to them. I wrote and said that, you know, this is my experience, and came in, did an audition, and got Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and the rest is history. I always think that's one of the smartest things I did.
And bringing us right up to date, you were the narrator for Orange is the New Black, which, of course, is a huge hit on Netflix.
It is.
How did you find that? A woman 10 years after she committed a crime, living a perfectly normal life in the States, and gets sent to prison for over a year, and a hard women's prison at that.
Yeah, and the fact that it seems, when you see I've only seen like one episode of the Netflix, but you might assume that the novel is fiction, but it's not. And it reads as fiction, but it's actually written by, you know, the woman who was incarcerated. It's her story. Yeah, no, I think it's quite a remarkable book. The reason I remember that one is there were 47 prisoners. So that's 47 prisoner voices. That doesn't count all the people in the legal world and the prison wardens and, you know, everyone else. But yeah, so that was challenging. But she wrote some amazing characters.
Again, I associate you with another author, Jodi Picou, who always writes a good psychological thriller, and you seem to get very much into those when you're narrating them.
Well, the interesting thing is sometimes she writes from first-person perspective, and that's just something else I thought I would mention. Obviously, if you're doing a first-person subjective, and if it's I throughout the whole book, if it's just one character, then there's not much of a shift. But with Jodi, she often will have maybe four or five characters in a story, all with their own point of view. And if it's first person, that's even more challenging, because I have to suddenly become the Asperger boy and his brother and his mother in different chapters. And really remember, if it's first person, remember that narration voice throughout the chapter. So I'll do strange things like put little pink dots, if it's the mother, on the top of each page, just to sort of, in case I get a bit lost in my thoughts, it's like, yep, I'm still the mother. Because point of view, I think, is fascinating. It's one of the reasons I have incredible admiration for people who say, oh, I just read the book once and I kind of wing it. I like to discover it with the readers. I think, oh, that would make me so nervous, because I want to know. I like the shifts in point of view. I think it tells a lot about attitude and tone. You know, are we in the serial killer's mind, even though it's third person? So it's third person subjective. Third person subjective can be quite first person. If you have someone, say, berating themselves, let's say they go to a meeting with their boss and they leave and they sit in the car, they might say, she didn't know how she could have said that. What was wrong with her? That's not neutral. That's what I love, figuring out who's telling this section of the story.
And I know my producer, Robert, remembers you for having recorded the Little House on the Prairie series as well, which is... That presumably, you know, books that you must have read when...
I grew up on those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that must give you rather a nice warm feeling.
No, I loved reading those, because I remember, you know, reading about how they would... Just the hardship that they went through. And, yeah, I loved Laura Ingalls Wilder. That was thrilling. There were a lot of illustrations in the book, which made me sad because we lost those. And there were also little snippets of songs. So I was sort of making up folk songs. And I think I amused Robert somewhat because let's just say singing is not my strong suit. So the idea that Regina was composing and singing was pretty funny.
Now, not all the series that you get are serious literature. You seem to have read quite a lot of Mills and Boon books.
Have I? I have.
The Blaze Romances, I believe, which I know are very popular with RNIB library members. Are they fun to read?
They are. To be serious, the only problem that I ever have is if a book is well written, it's a joy to read. That sounds so obvious, but you can prepare it. But if, you know, sometimes there's a wonderful author, Shirley Jackson, who wrote the short story The Lottery, and I did The Haunting of Hill House. Sometimes her sentences, her descriptive sentences, would go on for 7 or 8 lines, but because they flowed so beautifully, they were easy to read. So as long as a book is well written, it's easy to read. The Mills and Boon are, they're fun. And some of the characters, I wouldn't say they're stock characters, but they're romantic characters that we want to identify with. So I might have my male, and I'll put a little heart next to him, my male heart voice. So he's like the heartthrob. He's the one that she has her heart's desire set on. Or I always think this book is, you know, take every book seriously. I would never send up a Mills and Boon because it's a romance novel. And there's something wonderful about it and something important about it to a lot of people. So I think they're very fun, and I hope that I manage to bring them to life with the joy and the sort of happy ending that they deserve.
And they're great escapism.
Exactly.
I think there's an awful lot of snobbery around, you know, what's literature and what's not. And the fact that Mills and Boon is as successful as it is means it reflects the fact that there are many, many thousands of people who are very happy reading them or having them read to them.
Exactly. So if I can bring that to life ever so slightly, then I've succeeded.
Do you ever squirm when they get a bit steamy?
I've been known to squirm. But you have to get over that, because if I wasn't comfortable reading one of the Blaze, Mills and Boon, I should say no. It's too late to be timid. If these people are falling into a passionate love affair and I'm going to hold back or make judgment on them worse, then I shouldn't be reading it.
Now, you are notorious for setting people's hearts racing whenever you come to the RNIB Talking Books studios.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. Baking.
Baking.
I have absolutely no illusions about my value. It is because I am a baker. I return places because I bake. I'm shameless.
You are not just a baker. You are a
I'm teasing. But I mean, yes, no, I know. It's such a wonderful way to first ingratiate yourself with people, and then you become indispensable because they need your baked items.
Ever thought of going on to Bake Off?
Oh, no.
We'd all vote for you.
No. Oh, no. Oh, the standard now is so high. We're into patisserie land, or, you know, it's beyond. No. I have enough trouble preparing a book and starting. Every time I start a book, I'm so nervous. And at the end, I have what I call last page-itis, where I want to end the book properly. And I get tongue-tied and nervous, thinking, I have to sort of, I know how I want to do it. And, you know, so no. Can you imagine me in the tent? I'd be on the floor weeping.
As I say, you're not just popular for your cakes.
Well, particularly, the listeners are now thinking, oh, great, well, we don't even get the cakes. So, yeah, that's not very helpful.
Yeah, but, you know, one of our regular listeners, Chris Gray, actually chose a book narrated by you as his hidden gem in the library. It was Water for Elephants, which I believe you narrated with William Roberts.
Oh, that's right.
A great tale of running away to join the circus.
Mostly Bill Roberts, though, I have to say. I didn't contribute that much. That's a tribute to Bill, but thank you, Chris.
Do you enjoy doing collaborative books? I noticed you've done Cloud Atlas.
Oh, I love it. Sometimes with a multi-voice narration, ideally there might be more, even with some of the Jodi Picoult, ideally there might be more than one narrator, but it's very difficult to coordinate 5 different people with their schedules, with the production schedule. You know, it sounds easy, but it's not. I love collaborating. Although, actually, we don't really collaborate. Although, I have emailed people, you know, sometimes just to say, what are you doing with that voice, or how far are we going with the accents, just so that we're all roughly in the same book.
Do you have a favourite book that you've narrated for RNIB?
One of them had to be a book I'd never read before, even though I'd seen the film, because it was quite a famous film, Rosemary's Baby by Ira Levin. And I absolutely loved it. Rosemary is quite controlled throughout the beginning. Well, she's quite excited in the beginning. You know, she starts out as a newly married, and they move into their dream apartment building, and everything's going well. And just it's there's like, you know, perfect psychological horror, just a kind of drip, drip, drip of things going slightly askew, slightly wrong. Are they? Are they not? And I just absolutely loved doing it. And by the end, yes, I was going a little bit wild, but I thought, well, if you don't reach a crescendo with Rosemary, and not to give anything away, but let's just say satanic cult comes into it, then I think you're not doing a service to the book. So, yeah, I loved that one. And then another book that I loved, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe by Fanny Flagg. Now, I did this quite a number of years ago, but it's a good example of it's perfectly written for an unabridged audio, because I just have the book here, if I could just quickly give an example. Every single chapter head, it will say, The Whistle Stop Cafe, Whistle Stop, Alabama, March 22nd, 1933. So we always know where we are. And then there's also a little newsletter written by one of the local people who's so funny. Sometimes without italics, without a change in print, there are visual clues that tell the reader we're moving into a different area here, or maybe a different character voice. We don't have that. So I love the fact that this book was set up to be clear, and we all know where we are in Alabama or Georgia. And yeah, I just loved it.
Regina Regan, thank you ever so much for giving up your time to come in.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much, Red.
And I very much look forward to many more years of listening to your lovely voice and eating your wonderful cakes.
Fingers crossed on both counts.
I ran into Mr. Lasseter yesterday at the Ridgemont Mall, and he said the office is just falling apart with you gone. They don't get many good secretaries at Lasseter Fertilizers. Mom, that's sort of why I called. Yes, darling? I want you to call Mr. Lasseter and tell him I won't be in on Monday morning. Oh, Mary Ann, I'm not sure you should ask for an extension on your vacation. It's not an extension, Mom. Well, then why? I'm not coming home, Mom. Silence. Then, dimly in the distance, a television voice began to tell Mary Ann's father about the temporary relief of hemorrhoids. Finally, her mother spoke. Don't be silly, darling. Mom, I'm not being silly. I like it here. It feels like home already. Mary Ann, if there's a boy, there's no boy. I've thought about this for a long time. Oh, don't be ridiculous. You've been there for 5 days.
My guest, Regina Regan, reading Tales of the City by Armistead Maupin, which is TB14068. For a full list of titles narrated by Regina, search the RNIB Library website, rniblibrary.com, or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999. Do you have a favourite narrator you like to snuggle up with? Or maybe you found a hidden gem in the library that you'd like to share? Why not drop us a line via the usual email address, readonair@rnib.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you.